I'm Sean Yost, your host. Thank you for joining us or sticking with us for our second hour on this Monday. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 889, and don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yost. That is my name, S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S, or go to my Facebook page if you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me. I'll share with the people unless you don't want me to, and I won't. Coming up a little bit later in our second hour, the Dual Inspiration segment, the co-host of Dual Inspiration, Bathsheba Smithen, is here, the lyricist, educator, recording artist, motivational speaker, talking about renewing your mind, renewing your mentality. That's coming up a little bit later. But first, we open the phone lines to continue to discuss the conversation about violence and homicide in our city. But a conversation geared towards some suggestions, because what we're doing as a city, unfortunately, but obviously, is not working well for us right now in 2017, 2 years after the uprising of 2015. Marvin Doc Cheatham remains in the studio with me. He is the CEO of the Matthew Henson Community Development Corporation, longtime civil rights advocate. Doc, I appreciate you taking time to stick with us. We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines. A whole lot of people want to get into the conversation. Let's start with Dr. Randy Rowell. I believe he is a professor here at Morgan State University, the School of Community Health and Policy. Dr. Rowell, welcome to First Edition.
Yes, how you doing today? Can you hear me well?
Yes, sir, I hear you, brother.
Yes, I usually am a very avid listener, but today, because my research is in the area of disaster research, first I want to say to your guest, yes, communities can be in a disaster state, and you can have an emergency. I have done a lot of research with low-income populations and disasters, and one of the things that the research clearly said is that resilience, and that is the ability for a community to bounce back from an adverse event, is more than a natural disaster. So the disaster state of our communities is worthy of a national response plan. A national response framework is what all of us benefit from when a natural disaster happens. There's a very structured approach for how to deal with an emergency. There's various, at the local level, at the state level, at the president level, and the president said,
We may have lost Dr. Rowell again. What I would do is invite Dr. Rowell to, do we have him back? I don't know. What I would do is I want to invite Dr. Rowell to be my guest on the show sometime in the near future, actually. Dr. Rowell, are you back?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, we lost you for a minute, but I'll let you go ahead and wrap up what you were saying, though.
Well, in summary, that's the framework we should be talking about. This is a disaster. Disasters happen along a continuum. First, there are daily crises, which create a tremendous amount of stress, which have everything to do with the types of behaviors we carry out. And then there are 911 calls that deal with medical type of need. And then there are disasters and catastrophic events.
Right.
So we need to frame our, we are at the approach of a disaster when this many people are dying or being injured. And we're not even talking about the injured.
Right.
Because they are also an important part of this problem, so and need to be addressed. But in summary, what I'd like to say is this. I would like to have more conversation about this. It's a multifaceted approach, an interdisciplinary approach. We cannot talk about this problem unless we're talking about economic development,
right,
information systems at work, and also building community capacity. Now, these all things seem pie in the sky. But all these
Not
assets
really.
And research exists right in the neighborhoods we're talking about.
Understood.
We have to tap into it and trust them to lead us to lead us to the solution.
Dr. Rao, I thank you for your insight into this conversation, and we hope to hear from you and have continued conversations with you in the very near future. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Clarence in Baltimore. Clarence, you're on with Doc Cheatham. How you doing?
Hey, I'm fine, Sean. Thanks for taking the call.
Of course.
And Doc,
yes, sir.
Good afternoon to you, evening to you also.
God bless you, my brother.
The gentleman that was just on, I can say yada, 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 because you're talking about appealing to the orchestrators of the emergency in the first place. You know, that just doesn't go with me. Of course, the opposition to this has to come from the community, you know, those within the community. But now let's look at the orchestrators. The orchestrators are such that the black community has no support from the court system or the political system. Now, let me ask you a question. In its name, was the Violent Gang Task Force or the drug enforcement, you know, the guys that went around in the police department, did it, was that a bad idea? No, it was not a bad idea on the surface, but you handed it over to a structure of policing that said, okay, go out and do what you want to do, and, you know, if you kill a few people and you violate every law in the book, then, you know, that's okay, because the FOP has got your back. Therein lies your top-down problem right there. You don't have a system of policing in this city based on the political structure that enables it to operate as such. You don't have a police structure that's promoting the domestic tranquility. So when you start right there, then you can drop down into the middle of the problem. But therein lies your problem right there.
Yeah.
We will have this same problem because we will be Jedi mind tricked into thinking that because we jump behind the Democratic Party and somebody with Rhodes Scholar behind his name, that that's not going to change.
Well, thank you. Shame on us if something like that just takes our eye off the ball in this situation, Doc. Clarence may have been a bit in some disagreement with the professor, but I think let's give the professor credit for making it plain. We need to call it what it is. If you have 150 homicides, deaths, murders in a city, and hundreds of shootings, where people are injured, where they're incapacitated, that I don't know what else you want to. I mean, this is not a war zone technically. But it is reminiscent of one, unfortunately.
I agree.
Let's take some more phone calls. Let's go to Linda in Gwin Oak. Linda, you are on with Doc Cheatham. How you doing?
Hi, good evening, and how are you?
All right, sis.
Good evening.
Okay, look, I wanted to make a statement. You know, years ago, when I was a teenager, they used to have a show they used to bring on called Scared Straight.
Where
teenagers really made aware of the danger getting in trouble. You know,
they interacted with inmates and who told them they literally scared them straight because they told them they described the realities, what it was like being locked up in institutions across our state.
Yes. And another thing, you know, I know that, it's a little too late to, bring it out. But I knew that when they, you know, made marijuana legalized marijuana, that's when we really lost, really, that our children and grandchildren was turned over into the hands of the enemy, devil himself.
Well, Linda, thank you for your call. But, I mean, we were struggling a lot longer before. First of all, marijuana is not medical marijuana. I don't even want to get into the discussion about medical marijuana versus recreational marijuana, but I don't think it has anything to do with really what we're talking about right now. Unfortunately, I mean, people can debate that. We don't have time to debate that issue. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Diane. She's been holding for a long time. Diane, you're on with Doc Cheatham.
Hi, Good evening. How y'all doing?
All right, sis.
I'm fine. You know, I was sitting here listening to Doc when he first started.
Aunt Diane.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Great to hear. I thought that was your voice.
I'm good. I'm good. You know, sometimes I feel like not calling in on radio shows because I think that we sit here and ponder and talk, and people don't care as long as we talk. But if we start, the professor said it right, if we start with the economic piece that we are talking about. Also, Doc, you made a clear statement that there no one has a way out of this thing, not even the police department and not even us. But what really bothers me, this thing has been infested for over so many decades. You know, it eased up, but then it comes back. Like under Schaefer, when he was the city mayor, you know, it was up to 300, you know, homicides a year, you know. But and then under Kurt Schmoke, he even went up even higher. And it's like we don't have a plan to get ourselves out of this situation. And it takes us as community, men in the community, walking in their community every night, talking to the young men, and getting the young men that have been in trouble and come back and had a second chance and doing the right thing. They can talk to the ones that are going the wrong way because they're going to listen to them because they already been in this situation. So they more likely to listen to them. And we as a village need to demand, like you said, Doc, you talked about Elijah Cummings, you talked about all of them. They are our representatives. Why haven't they bring the money back into our community for the recreation center? Because you get it from the federal level, too. You know, recreation money comes not only from the state of Maryland, but also from the federal level and housing from the federal level. Right. Because we don't have enough housing in our community, and it's like our children are rising up against us because we're not doing as much as we can for them. Diane, so they, you know, it's like they're going to do what they want
to
do.
Diane, thank you for your time. We have a lot of people we have to get to. But to one of Diane's points, Doc, the Safe Streets program in Baltimore, which for most accounts had done some incredible work on the streets of Baltimore, utilizing men who have been a part of the criminal justice system, on the wrong side of the criminal justice system, to intercede in disputes within our community. The funding got, the federal funding, I believe, got yanked for Safe Streets. And the city council has been fighting to, and as a matter of fact, there's a vote tonight about the budget. So we'll see if Safe Streets is actually funded. But I think that's a perfect example in some ways of how programs that work, for whatever reasons, fall by the wayside somehow.
One of the problems that I did have with Safe Streets, and I did briefly serve on the mayor's advisory board dealing with crime and violence, but felt that I could no longer go along to get along with the folks that were on that bunch. One of the challenges that I think we have to be very careful with is not only who gets the money, but then at the end of the day, who is really benefiting? Is it really the community that is suffering, or is it those philanthropic organizations that are getting their new BS degrees, getting their certificates for doing community work here in the ghetto with us poor brown and black folks here in our community? So I was not pleased with Safe Streets, and I've had some discussions with the health department about it because of their lack of knowledge of our community. Safe Streets had a project called Safe Streets 21217, where one-third of my community is in 21217, and we were totally left out. And the reason we were left out is because you have people who don't live in our city, let alone state, that are implementing programs where funding is coming in, and they really don't know, you know, how the communities are being affected that should receive the benefit. And my community was one of those that did not benefit from Safe Streets 21217, and anybody knows Appleton, Pace, and all of those streets are 21217. So I'm fearful of any lack of oversight as to who gets the money and who basically benefits from it.
Well, the implementation, I think, is what you're talking about. Yeah. Let's go to Brother David Miller next. David Miller, you're on Doc Cheatham. David, welcome to the show, man. Thank you for calling in, brother.
Brothers, how y'all doing?
All right,
good, David. Love you, brother. Keep doing what you're doing.
Love you, too. So let me just say this really quickly, Sean, and to the listening audience. Mm-hmm. Doc and I and others have been talking about these same issues for over a decade. And so what ends up happening is people just kind of move us to the side and act like we crazy and we don't know what we're talking about. myself and Richard Rowe just finished a report for the Annie Casey Foundation and Open Society. It is our hope to release this report within the next, couple of weeks. But we interviewed 45 grassroots organizations, black-owned and operated organizations, who have a black male youth strategy. We did a landscape analysis of 45 of these groups.
Right.
Out of these 45 groups, 83% of these groups have less than an annual operating budget of $100,000. The vast majority of black organizations in Baltimore who live in the community, know the community, have relationships with the children, know the grandparents, know the uncles, have been historically locked out of the funding cycle. And what ends up happening is, I know a lot of times folks don't want to admit this, but you have white nonprofits that gobble up the lion's share of city money, state money, federal money, and the money that's being doled out by all of the philanthropic groups in the city. And so what ends up happening is, when you look at a brother like Cameron Miles, we should be focused on, if Cameron is working with, say, 40 boys a year, how can we scale up Cameron's operation
right. So
within 2 years we can provide him with the technical assistance and the funding to move from working with 40 boys to 300 boys? That's a very solid, tangible strategy. But what ends up happening is, we do these feel-good events, we have these symposiums, we keep having all these conversations, and nothing has changed. It's been a state of emergency. I think Doc is being real nice. It's been a state of emergency, Sean, since we went to Walbrook back in the late to early 1980s. It's been a state of emergency, but folks don't want to claim it because particularly elected officials, if they claim it, they don't have to do something about it.
Right. David, thank you.
He is always so much on point. And all I can say is, I'm not into cloning, but I wish God had made 6 or 7 of you, my brother, because you have done and continue to do so much. Just thank you, David, for all you continue
Absolutely.
To do, man.
Thank you so much. I'm proud to say, another Walbrook warrior. Thank God. Let's go to Lisa. She's been holding for a long time. Lisa, in Baltimore, you're on with Doc Cheatham. How you doing?
Hi, Sean. Thank you. And again, I appreciate your programming so much. So thank you for what you do for the community.
Thank you, sir.
Doc, I'm going to kind of just make it really simple. Maybe, again, the phrasing, the state of emergency, is what needs to be changed, because of what I've heard my millennial niece say this. It kind of connotates the actions that the political powers that be can take against persons. If we call it a state of emergency in our community, that it makes it almost like open season on the things that we see as far as the brutality from the police forces, and it could just, I guess, escalate. So if we looked at maybe calling it what it really is, which is a humanitarian crisis, which, like the first caller said, the other professor, that it's about a disaster. It's a humanitarian disaster, but the nucleus or the focal point is of black citizens, maybe that entails will allow us to open up another a door, avenue of dialogue with persons outside of homeland, because we're not getting any results with what's here. We keep doing the same thing, expecting things to change, and it's not. We're not getting the help from the people we keep asking the help for. We're not totally capable of fixing the problem ourselves, so maybe we need to kind of find some way to connect, or have some kind of, a connection or outreach to the world on the international scale, and maybe someone can help us or give us some suggestions of what to do in our crisis, because there are other humanitarian crises throughout the world. And this is what I see it as. I think even Brother Malcolm spoke in the same respect. So, I'm not so eloquent in the way I'm putting it, but I think Sean and you guys can understand what I'm trying to say.
I think you're very clear, Lisa, and to her point, Lisa, thank you. To her point, I mean, we have to understand that violence is not an epidemic just in Baltimore. Violence is a hemispheric epidemic. I mean, South American countries, South Central American countries are witnessing similar types of violence in those countries as we are here in the United States, specifically in Baltimore. So when we approach it from that way and we take a national and international scope, it changes the trajectory of how we deal with the problem, I think.
One of the issues that were brought up on a third different radio show was what would happen if this disaster response, and I kind of like what Lisa brought up and what Professor Rao said as well, this disaster response, what would be the response if what was happening to our community happened in Roland Park or happened in Bolton Hill or happened in Mount Washington? Would we be still having this discussion, or would that disaster response already be taking place? And, you know, it was questioned by a number of people today as to whether or not this has a color to it. And I would say, yes, it does. How do you get around it? You know that you're not going to have these kind of things in certain communities. And evidently, our elected officials and us as community service and leaders, we too have some responsibility. I don't want to necessarily say blame, but we have some responsibility to stop talking about it. I'm not interested in having a whole bunch of meetings. What I'm calling for is a community crime reduction center that addresses the disaster response of these homicides and this significant uptick in violent crimes that are taking place here in Baltimore City.
Let's take another call quickly. Let's go to Tyrone in Catonsville. Tyrone, you're on with Doc Cheatham. How you doing?
Yes, I think we need to be not only more analytical, we need to take action. I think Doc Cheatham said that what just happened in Roland Park. You got to understand, first of all, that the medium income in places like Upper Park Heights as compared to Lower Park Heights is $70,000 a year, okay? So it's not going to happen there because their sons have jobs, their sons' daughters have jobs, or they're going to college, and you're making $70,000 a year, so you don't have a reason to stand on the corner and sell dope. Okay, so you got to realize that a lot of these things, and I'm not excusing any of it, it's a socioeconomic problem, and the police alone will not solve these problems because people still like to eat, they still like money, just like people that have jobs. We used to have jobs in places, black people used to work in places like Sparrow's Point, which is closed, Bendex, which is closed, Westinghouse, which is not open anymore, the GM plant on Browning Highway, which is closed. We got to understand that we need to get our people employed and bought.
Yes, sir.
And we have a lack of affordable housing in this community. For every 100 families looking for affordable housing, there's only 43 units. So we need to save some of this housing. It's $700 million to tear down houses.
Yeah.
And the group that I'm working with, of a businessman like myself, we're trying to figure out a way to save these houses and have people in the community actually benefit by learning trades and learn how to make a living wage as opposed to minimum wage, which is what we want to pay ex-offenders for the rest of their lives.
Understood.
So Tyrone, we need real things that work.
Absolutely. Tyrone, thank you for your call. And I thank all of our callers. I'm sorry. I apologize for not being able to get to everybody. The lines were lit up the entire time that we had Doc Cheatham on for this first segment in the second hour. Doc, you know we have an open door policy for you.
Thank you so much.
And we appreciate your time. We appreciate your service for all these decades. And hopefully, the next time we talk, maybe we'll have some better news to share.
I have great optimism with the mayor and the new and young and energetic members of the city council. I'm just hoping that they're hearing us crying out in the wilderness, saying very clearly, we can and must do better. We're talking about people. We're talking about our children.
Absolutely. Dr. Cheatham, thank you, man.
God bless you, Sean.
Bless you, brother.
Thank
you. Bless you. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Bathsheba Smithen will be here. She's the co-host of the Dual Inspiration segment, talking about renewing your mind, your mentality. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. We'll be right back.
it's all right. Living day by day, I feel so used, that ain't right. I just wanna run and hide, but I don't have the time to cry. It's all right,
it's all right,
it's all right, all right. Any thoughts are running through my head, it's all right. Wishing to be somewhere else but here, and it's all right. I can't wait to see your face. I need a smile in your embrace, and I'm all right.
It's all right,
I'm all right. Sad, and it's all right.
It's all right.
Some things in the world, they make me mad.
And we need Bathsheba's mic on. Let's see. I think it's on now.
Yeah,
it's on now. Maybe it is. Say something, Bath.
Yeah.
There you go. You there.
You're
there. You're there. That's Bathsheba Smithson.
What's up, guys?
She is the co-host of the Dual Inspiration segment. She's a lyricist, educator, recording artist, and motivational speaker, and cool girl.
Thanks. I think you're cool too, Sean.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, that was a heavy segment, the previous segment. But, I mean, that's why we do what we do in our second hour typically, and that is offer hope and inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what this is about. This is the Dual Inspiration segment. See how? See what just happened?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
We're going to be talking about, renewing your mind.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? Because, I mean, I'm telling you, just on smaller and more selfish level, I need to renew my mind today, boy. They put me through it. They put me through it today, but it's all right. But but in all honesty, I say that half jokingly, but we really need renewal every day, especially
absolutely
the type of work that we do. I mean, we need that renewal every single day, really.
Right, because how you think in your mind is going to impact your entire lifestyle, what you're thinking, and being able to determine. I was having this conversation with some of my sister girlfriends, and we were talking about your thought life. And some of us kind of think, you know, that all of the thoughts that we have are our original thoughts. Mm. And so, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Wait a minute now. Wait a minute, Press. What did you say it again?
So some of us tend to think that all of the thoughts that we think stem from us, uh-huh, that there are original thoughts.
Right.
But I beg to differ, right? Like, you have to be able to get to the source before you even get to the process of renewing your mind. You have to be able to identify where those thoughts
are coming from.
Yeah.
Because they aren't always our original thoughts. They've thoughts that have been planted.
Right.
By different things, different people, different phenomena.
Yeah.
Wow, let's get into that a little bit.
Yeah,
you got to guard your mind, right?
Right, you have to guard it. And it's not always it's not necessarily something that's immediately being said to you right at that moment. You could be having thoughts that surface from years ago that are plaguing your mind. And so if you are unable to identify who is talking in your head, you'll begin to associate yourself with those thoughts and think that they're actually your original thoughts. And so then you go on this constant roller coaster of feeling condemned for thoughts that are not even yours. So let's say, for example, I believe that there are thoughts that come from yourself, right? Like, those are your original thoughts. There are thoughts that come from the enemy. There are thoughts that come from seeds that have been planted by other people. And sometimes we mix them all together and we'll say, you know, like, I know this suggests, you know, like, if you're Christian or whatever your faith is, that's a trick of the enemy. Like, it might not be the enemy, it might be you. Right. That might be you talking to yourself. and on the flip side, it could be, you know, some thought that came from a while ago from your upbringing, your childhood, and you're associating that with yourself and saying, you know, I'm not brilliant in that area. And you're saying that you're not brilliant in that area. And who told you that? Right. Like, you're thinking that you're not that because somebody told you that you weren't. And now you have taken ownership of something that was not even yours in the first place. So getting to the root is very important in the beginning before you can even renew your mind. I probably sound a little crazy right now,
but
getting ready to say is probably.
Okay. All right.
But, you know, I have to look at it and say, who's talking right now? Like, who's talking? Is that my father? Right. Like, is that my mother talking, or is that Bathsheba? You know, is that my inner critic, or
that
is that
sound, that doesn't sound crazy at all. I mean, I think that as with wisdom comes the ability, comes discernment, and the ability to sort of put these ideas and these thoughts in order.
Yeah.
Because if you're a little bit younger, it can be confusing.
Yeah.
But once you've had some experiences.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always, you know, it's not always what you think, and it's not always you whose thoughts you are. And that's a really, wow, that's a powerful, powerful distinction there.
And what I just thought about was, you know, how if you're Christian and you're familiar with the Bible, and it tells us to cast down every imagination that exalts, cast it down, you know, like that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. And I'm super paraphrasing, so go check your Bible. But I think about, like, how do you hold those thoughts captive? How do you put a criminal in jail if you don't know? If you can't identify the criminal, right? Like, if you're saying this, because sometimes you have to sit your own self down. Like, I need to lock you up real quick because you're talking crazy. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't mean crazy in a sense of, you know, like, I'm not being insensitive to those who struggle with mental illnesses, but, you know, like, you're talking outside of what I know to be true about myself.
Well, here's a perfect example. I went through a situation over the weekend. I can't even. It was such a simple situation, and it got me so frustrated. I mean, really super frustrated, and I was talking crazy to myself.
Yeah,
I was beating myself up.
Yeah,
which I'm not invincible. I'm not immune to that.
Yeah,
but it was to a level where it wasn't real healthy, and I had to really check myself out and say, man, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, and this had nothing to do with anybody else.
Right.
This was all me,
right, right,
for real. And the reality is, maybe it was some negative thoughts from somebody else years ago that kind of really surfaced and came out the way they did because I was tripping.
Yeah.
And I had to lay down for real.
Yeah. If you think about it, like, we invest so much in our outward appearance. Like, I want to get these nice clothes. I want to get these shoes, you know. Like, even I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week. But. Yeah. And that's not a bad thing.
No.
But we, as much as we invest in our physical health, we need to be investing in our mental health.
Amen to that.
Because that's the driver of everything. I was talking to some of my sisters and I was telling them, you know, when I ride my bike, it's not necessarily the focus is not my physical health. It's therapeutic for me to be able to just decompress, like, in my mind. And that's a way to kind of renew too. Because you can get stuck. You can get stuck in a thought, and then your feet can't move. You can't get out of a space. Like, you're easily isolated because some of the loudest noise is inside of us and not outside of us. Mm. And so trying to figure out ways to quiet it so that we can move is important.
Well, and it goes into what does it mean to renew your mind? I think you just gave us one example of how we can do it. Sometimes you need that time alone to decompress and to let go of all that stuff that's weighing down on us. You came out the box so heavy. I'm still trying to sort through like the first sentence you said, and you already hit me with four or five other things. But this is serious work.
Yeah,
this is serious work. because we there's one thing to succumb to the pressures that we place on ourselves.
Yeah.
But there's another thing when we start dealing with the external pressures of this life, and so we are up against a lot.
Yeah, we are. And it's constant, constant fear that we're encountering, concerns that we have about what's going on in our society. And I would say before even renewing your mind, you have to be cognizant of who you allow in your ear, right?
Yeah.
You have to put up some barriers, right? Because we like, it's so vital, it's so important. I'm getting really excited right now because it's so important who you allow into your ear.
Absolutely.
Space, because then they have territory in your mind, and you're giving away expensive space to
right.
somebody who may not even understand what's going on in your head.
A buddy of mine, photographer friend, I don't know if Andre is out there listening, but Andre said to me, we were talking about something, this was years ago, we were on the road, we went back and forth between Maryland and Arkansas by car. Working on a documentary about black farmers in Arkansas. And I was talking to him about this situation, and it was something really stupid.
Yeah.
And he said, man, why are you letting this cat rent space in your head?
Mm.
He said it.
Wow.
And I mean, that totally opened my eyes. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And I never forgot that. I never forgot that. You know, something totally ridiculous. It was just a silly thing. But he pulled my coat to that, and I remember that statement plainly. The other thing that I wanted to say, and I've been thinking about over the weekend, you know the movie The Matrix, the original great movie,
love
right?
Love that movie.
So many people love that movie. But it occurred to me, just thinking about it, The Matrix was really fear. That's what The Matrix really was. It was, I mean, everything that they talked about as far as what the Matrix actually was, like the physical Matrix, the physical implementation of it, it was rooted in the fears of the people who were trapped in it. That's what the Matrix really was.
Wow, so how many of us are in the Matrix?
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Right? Because you can be in a society that is in constant distress and not be of it. Right. Like you can be outside, just like the movie The Matrix.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
Like you can be free and not overwhelmed with fear.
The red pill or the blue pill.
The blue pill.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And thinking about renting space in your head. We would not allow some unworthy occupant, like if you owned a house, to rent your house, and because you know they would probably not take care of it.
Tear it up.
Right. But why would we just easily allow people to rent space in our minds? It's important that we really think about what, and not just people coming and talking to us one-on-one or face-to-face, but what we decide to listen to, right? Or what because the mind is so complex and it houses not just your auditory, but also your occipital lobe. I think I'm saying it right. I've been out of
I think so.
But you know, your vision is going to impact your memories too.
Mm.
And so what you're allowing in with what you see, so those are going to create thoughts for you as well. So how do you get to the place of renewing those thoughts on a daily basis, because you're seeing stuff and hearing stuff all day long. I pray over my daughter every night. You know, I pray over her and I pray over her ears. I pray over her eyes, and you know, I could sound real super spiritual, I'd like for her to filter out some of the stuff that she doesn't need, that she may hear, but you know, it may possibly taint her. She might hear it, but when I pray over her ears, I pray that stuff is filtered out, that she won't take in anything that she didn't need to hear in the first place. But when we're talking about renewing for all of us, one of the things is you have, just like you get in a tub and you take a bath or you take a shower, you have to wash your mind, right? Like, and the way you do that is what you decide to, because you can't empty out a space without filling it back up with something else. And so you have to be cognizant of what books you're going to read, right? That's going to help you renew some of those thoughts, because many of us have really heavily rooted thoughts about ourselves from our childhoods. Oh. And the only way to uproot those things is to start replacing them with some new ways of thinking and getting around people who we know emotionally, like in that connection, have a positive vibe about them. And they're, you know, because, you know, sometimes it's difficult for us to even think. I say all the time, I need to think the sometimes I'm stuck because I'm not thinking the thoughts that I need to think. Mm-hmm. Right. And when you surround yourself and you diversify like a portfolio, right, like you diversify and you get around different people who have a positive ambiance about them, you can begin to start thinking differently than being trapped in your own head. But not only that, but, you know, what the material that you read, what you decide to watch on TV, what you decide to listen to in your music. You can tell when you listen to a music song, like a musical song. You just, I mean, it immediately shifts your mood. Mm. It has. We were just talking about this. I was talking about this with my girlfriend, Ashley, and another friend of mine, Chandra, and just the power of music. Absolutely. It is the one thing that you psychologically don't have control over even when you're asleep. Right.
To that point, I say it all the time, no matter how badly I may feel or may feel frustrated or anxious or whatever the negative kind of energy is that's going on, I turn that house music on.
Yeah.
There's nothing can keep me down.
Right.
When I put that house music on. And that is, I mean, it's a salve for so many of us, you know what I mean, when we're going through it. And it doesn't have to be house. It could be whatever. But understand that what you put in, it's real, you know. And so these cats listening to what they listening to, I think we know what we're talking about. It's not harmless.
And you know, we get into these debates, and I'm not one to debate with people about, you know, the impact of music or anything like that. But
just know it's real.
Yeah. Some people don't realize the impact of it and how it impacts, you know, what you're thinking, how you feel. If you were to think about it, just, you know, you wouldn't watch, if you imagine a movie with no sound, with no music, right? When the suspenseful part of the movie comes up and there's no music, right? That's the impact that music has on that movie. It emotes something.
Right. It accentuates and it amplifies.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So being cognizant of what you put into your mind when you listen to music, listening to something that's inspirational, listening to gospel, listening to something that's positive, not something like if you just broke up with somebody, right? Mm-hmm. I did this when I was in college. When I broke up with somebody, I don't know why we do this, but we immediately
don't
go to all the Say It Love songs.
Please don't tell me you turned on some Sade. Don't. If you break up with somebody, don't turn on.
I had on Toni Braxton. I had on Whitney.
Lord,
I had
Whole Days.
Yes, Lord. I had everything on, and it just put me.
Is it a crime, Sade? Don't do that to yourself.
But that's
don't
what we do, that. Right? Like, you know. But we have to combat how we feel with, you know, something that is going to uplift us.
Yeah, indeed. Let's take a phone call real quick. Let's go to Ken in Pikesville. Ken, you're on with Bathsheba Smith. And how you doing, Ken?
Hello. How are you to both of you? How are you all?
All right, Ken.
You know, I was working for a collection agency some time ago. You know how vicious collectors can be.
Yes, sir.
And in doing that, you sort of come across all types of people. Well, anyway, me and this young gentleman got into a beef at work. And this guy pulls me aside. One of the managers pulled me aside. He said, "You know what 88 keys mean?" And I said, "I think that's a piano." He said, "No, 88 keys is actually physical keys, a ring of keys." Now, I don't know if this is a mental health concept or not, but he said, every time you encounter somebody, you let them in your space, you give them a key.
Giving
them that key, you allow them access to some of the most intricate parts of who you are mentally, and they have some sort of control. And he said, if you think about it, some of the most successful people may have one friend or two friends at best that have keys to them. And he said some of them who have had more keys, before they became successful, they went out and repossessed those keys. Not necessarily by going out and physically telling somebody you can't talk to me anymore, but just simply by cutting off the contact with negative people, wow. and that's when they started their ascent. Now, I don't know if ADA Keys is a, wow. is a mental health concept, mm-hmm. but it makes sense that every time you talk to somebody and they you give them your cell number and they call you and say, yo, man, I met this girl, and he's a married man, and he's trying to talk about no, some woman or some young lady that had a bad relationship with someone, and they're dropping that in your space. You know, it's time to repossess those keys.
Yeah. Right, right.
Ken, man, thank you for that wisdom, brother. We appreciate that.
Wow, wow. You just dropped some heavy knowledge, bro.
Boom.
Like, boom, dropped the mic. I mean, really, like, every time you talk to someone, you're giving them a key. Wow, that's rocking my world right now. Because so, I'm over here thinking about whose keys do I need to have repossessed.
But that's real. That's yeah. real, man. When you keep, you don't want everybody to have the keys to your crib.
Right.
You know? And you don't want everybody to have the keys to your dome either, really.
That's good.
Yeah. yeah. You don't want that. You don't want that. But Ken is right. I mean, I really only have a handful of real serious friends, and they're spread out all over the country. Yeah. You know, so yeah, it's not don't too many people have keys.
Right, right. And I know I'm supposed to know enough about this, right? Like, because we're talking about this topic, but I still have questions myself.
Of course.
And so, what do you know? The question for me right now is, in the space that I'm in, what do you do when somebody just invades your space? When you have put up barriers, they invade your space and they start to speak, even if you're trying to like keep them at a distance. What are your thoughts on that?
Run faster. I don't know. I don't know. Well, first of all, it's problematic. That's troubling that someone is trying to invade your space. I mean, that's a problem.
Right. Like, let's say, for example, and when I say that, I'm going to give you this example. Like, if you're somebody who is a public figure, you're in a space and you're speaking, and somebody just decides after you finish, they're going to walk up to you and put hands on you and start praying. Right. That you didn't even ask.
No.
That's invasion.
That is invasive. Yeah. Very much so. And I would say you have to be really firm about that,
yeah.
and help them understand that no means no in every way, shape, and form.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
Yeah,
yeah, that's not cool. Yeah. You don't know who. I mean,
what they're bringing with them,
No. They people say they praying.
Right.
You can't always. Nah. That's definitely not cool.
Yeah, so that takes a conversation to another level too, like invaders, right? Like people who want to invade your mental space. Yeah, like what do you do then? What kind of do you put deadbolts?
like you better do something.
Do you put alarms on?
I think that you have to be really firm and really, really adamant that. You know, a hostile takeover is not going to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's not going to work. So how will we wrap this up, Bathsheba? I mean, we were traveling per usual.
Yeah. I just want to talk about that cage free mindset, being free. I think that and being free doesn't necessarily mean doing whatever you want, since some of the very things that you want to do are a result of the bondage that you previously experienced.
Sure.
And so, and being free is being able to release some of those things. Like if you think about things that you are not able to release, then those things have a hold on you. And they have a hold on your mind. So being able to let those things go on a daily basis, like consciously praying, if that's one of the things that you do, if you need to meditate, that'll help you get into a healthy space in your mind. As well as identifying those voices so that you can be free to forgive, right? Like, because forgiveness is one of the things that cloud our mind. Unforgiveness is one of those things that clouds our minds. And so we also have to tackle some of those things at the root so that we can be free in our mindsets as well. Yeah.
Bathsheba Smithen. She's a lyricist, educator, recording artist, motivational speaker, and dope girl. Co-host of the Dual Inspiration segment, really beautiful wisdom you laid on us this evening, sis. I appreciate you. We all appreciate you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sean. I hope you guys, we're going to be doing a Cage-Free Voices Ambassador series. Yeah.
When is that?
We're going to start it at the end of July, but okay. We're partnering with Impact Hub in D.C., and we'll have more information later.
I was going to say, next time you come through, you got to lay it out for us.
Okay.
Will do. Thank you, Bathsheba. Appreciate
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Sean.
That is it for us. That is it for First Edition. It is a production of WEAA. The show is produced by executive producer Sean Yones, associate producer Iorio Digizua. Our board operators, Andre Melton and Ty Rice. First Edition interns, Isaiah George, Wyman Jones, Kristen West, Alex Blanc, Valentin Davis. Stay tuned for Keep It Moving with Marsha Jews next right here on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM. The voice of the community, I am Sean Yones. Peace.
It makes me so confused, but it's all right. Living day by day, I feel so used, that ain't right. I just wanna run and hide, but I don't have the time to cry. And it's all right,
it's all right,
it's all right, all right. Any thoughts are running through my head, it's all right.